Our next story, Goodbye and Good Luck, brings us from Yiddish to English, from Eastern Europe to America, but just barely. Its author, Grace Paley, is one of the very few contemporary writers who've managed to capture Yiddish cadence, inflection, and syntax in modern American English. Born in New York in 1922, Grace Paley spent most of her energies as a young woman raising a family. It was only when she took sick for several weeks in 1954, sick enough for her children to remain at school until supper time, but not sick enough to keep her from typing at the living room table, that she found the time to write Goodbye and Good Luck, her first published work. Her collected stories fill but a single volume, but what a volume it is. Acclaimed by critics, it was nominated for the National Book Award for Fiction in 1994. Goodbye and Good Luck, by Grace Paley. Our reader is Rhea Perlman.
I was popular in certain circles, says Aunt Rose. I wasn't no thinner then, only more stationary in the flesh. In time to come, Lily, don't be surprised. Change is a fact of God. From this, no one is excused. Only a person like your mama stands on one foot, she don't notice how big her behind is getting, and sings in the canary's ear for 30 years. Who's listening? Papa's in the shop, you and Seymour thinking about yourself. So she waits in a spotless kitchen for a kind word, and thinks, poor Rosie. Poor Rosie! If there was more life in my little sister, she would know my heart is a regular college of feelings, and there is such information between my corset and me that her whole married life is a kindergarten. Nowadays, you could find me any time in a hotel, uptown or downtown. Who needs an apartment to live like a maid with a dust rag in the hand, sneezing? I'm in very good with the busboys. It's more interesting than home, all kinds of people. Everybody with a reason. And my reason, Lily, is a long time ago I said to the forelady, Mrs., if I can't sit by the window, I can't sit. If you can't sit, girlie, she says politely, go stand on the street corner. And that's how I got unemployed in novelty wear. For my next job, I answered an ad which said, refined young lady, medium salary, cultural organization. I went by trolley to the address, the Russian Art Theater of Second Avenue, where they played only the best Yiddish plays. They needed a ticket seller, someone like me who likes the public but is very sharp on crooks. The man who interviewed me was the manager, a certain type. Immediately, he said, Rosie Lieber, you surely got a build on you. It takes all kinds, Mr. Krimberg. Don't misunderstand me, little girl, he said. I appreciate. A young lady lacking fore and aft, her blood is so busy warming the toes and the fingertips, it don't have time to circulate where it's most required. Everybody likes kindness. I said to him, only don't be fresh, Mr. Krimberg, and we'll make a good bargain. We did. $9 a week, a glass of tea every night, a free ticket once a week for Mama, and I could go watch rehearsals anytime I want. My first $9 was in the grocer's hands, ready to move on already, when Krimberg said to me, Rosie, he is a great gentleman. A member of this remarkable theater wants to meet you, impressed no doubt by your big brown eyes. And who was it, Lily? Listen to me. Before my very eyes was Volodya Vlashkin, called by the people of those days the Valentino of Second Avenue. I took one look and I said to myself, where did a Jewish boy grow up so big? Just outside Kiev, he told me. How? My mama nursed me till I was 6. I was the only boy in the village to have such health. My goodness, Vlashkin, 6 years old. She must have had shredded wheat there, not breasts, poor woman. My mother was beautiful, he said. She had eyes like stars. He had such a way of expressing himself, it brought tears. To Krimberg, Vlashkin said after this introduction, "Who is responsible for hiding this wonderful young person in a cage?" "That is where the ticket seller sells." "So, David, go in there and sell tickets for a half hour. I have something in mind in regards to the future of this girl and this company. Go, David, be a good boy. And you, Miss Lieber, please, I suggest Feinberg's for a glass of tea. The rehearsals are long. I enjoy a quiet interlude with a friendly person." So he took me there. Feinberg's, then around the corner, a place so full of Hungarians it was deafening. In the back room was a table of honor for him. On the tablecloth, embroidered by the lady of the house, was, "Here Vlashkin eats." We finished one glass of tea in quietness, out of thirst, when I finally made up my mind what to say. "Mr. Vlashkin, I saw you a couple weeks ago, even before I started working here, in the Seagull. Believe me, if I was that girl, I wouldn't look even for a minute on the young bourgeois fellow. He could fall out of the play altogether. How Chekhov could put him in the same play as you, I can't understand." "You liked me?" he asked, taking my hand and kindly patting it. "Well, well, young people still like me. So, and you like the theater, too?" "Good." "And you, Rose, you know, you have such a nice hand, so warm to the touch, such a fine skin. Tell me, why do you wear a scarf around your neck? You only hide your young, young throat. These are not olden times, my child, to live in shame." "Who's ashamed?" I said, taking off the kerchief. But my hand right away went to the kerchief's place, because the truth is, it really was olden times, and I was still of a nature to melt with shame. "Have some more tea, my dear." "No, thank you, I am a samovar already." "Dorfman," he hollered like a king, "bring this child the seltzer with fresh ice." In weeks to follow, I had the privilege to know him better and better as a person, also the opportunity to see him in his profession. The time was autumn, the theater full of coming and going, rehearsing without end. After the Seagull flopped, the Salesman from Istanbul played a great success. Here the ladies went crazy. On the opening night, in the middle of the first scene, one Mrs., a widow, or her husband worked too long hours, began to clap and sing out, "Oi, oi, Vlashkin!" Soon there was such a tumult, the actors had to stop acting. Vlashkin stepped forward, only not Vlashkin to the eyes. A younger man with pitch-black hair, lively on restless feet, his mouth clever. A half century later, at the end of the play, he came out again, a gray philosopher, a student of life from only reading books, his hands as smooth as silk. I cried to think who I was. Nothing, and such a man, could look at me with interest. Then I got a small raise, due to he kindly put in a good word for me. And also for 50 cents a night, I was given the pleasure, together with cousins, in-laws, and plain stage-struck kids, to be part of a crowd scene, and to see like he saw every single night the hundreds of pale faces waiting for his feelings to make them laugh or bend down their heads in sorrow. The sad day came. I kissed my mama goodbye. Vlashkin helped me to get a reasonable room near the theater, to be more free. Also, my outstanding friend would have a place to recline away from the noise of the dressing rooms. She cried and she cried. "This is a different way of living, Mama," I said. "Besides, I am driven by love." You are a nothing, a rotten hole in a piece of cheese. You are telling me what is life," she screamed. Very insulted, I went away from her. But I am good-natured. You know, fat people are like that. Kind. And I thought to myself, poor Mama. It is true she got more of an idea of life than me. She married who she didn't like, a sick man, his spirit already swallowed up by God. He never washed. He had an unhappy smell. His teeth fell out. His hair disappeared. He got smaller, shriveled up little by little, till goodbye and good luck he was gone, and only came to Mama's mind when she went to the mailbox under the stairs to get the electric bill. In memory of him, and out of respect for mankind, I decided to live for love. Don't laugh, you ignorant girl. Do you think it was easy for me? I had to give Mama a little something. Ruthie was saving up, together with your papa, for linens, a couple knives and forks. In the morning, I had to do piecework if I wanted to keep by myself. So I made flowers. Before lunchtime, every day, a whole garden grew on my table. This was my independence, Lily dear, blooming, but it didn't have no roots and its face was paper. Meanwhile, Grimberg went after me, too. No doubt, observing the success of Lashkin, he thought, aha, open sesame. Others in the company similar. After me in those years was the following. Grimberg, I mentioned. Carl Zimmer played innocent young fellows with a wig. Charlie Peel, a Christian who fell in the soup by accident, a creator of beautiful sets. Color is his middle name, says Vlashkin, always to the point. I put this in to show you your fat old aunt was not crazy out of loneliness. In those noisy years, I had friends among interesting people who admired me for reasons of youth, and that I was a first-class listener. The actresses, Raisela, Maria, Esther Leopold, were only interested in tomorrow. After them was the rich men, producers, the whole garment center. Their past is a pincushion, future the eye of a needle. Finally, the day came. I no longer could keep my tact in my mouth. I said, Vlashkin, I hear by carrier pigeon you have a wife, children, the whole combination. True, I don't tell stories, I make no pretense. That isn't the question. What is this lady like? It hurts me to ask, but tell me, Vlashkin. A man's life is something I don't clearly see. Little girl, I have told you 100 times. This small room is the convent of my troubled spirit. Here I come to your innocent shelter to refresh myself in the midst of an agonized life. Ach, Vlashkin, serious, serious. Who is this lady? Rosie, she is a fine woman of the middle classes, a good mother to my children, 3 in number, girls all, a good cook, in her youth handsome, now no longer young. You see, could I be more frank? I entrust you, dear, with my soul. It was some few months later at the New Year's ball of the Russian Artists Club I met Mrs. Vlashkin, a woman with black hair in a low bun, straight and too proud. She sat at a small table speaking in a deep voice to whoever stopped a moment to converse. Her Yiddish was perfect, each word cut like a special jewel. I looked at her. She noticed me like she noticed everybody, cold like Christmas morning. Then she got tired. Vlashkin called a taxi, and I never saw her again. Poor woman. She did not know I was on the same stage with her. The poison I was to her role, she did not know. Later on that night, in front of my door, I said to Vlashkin, "No more. This isn't for me. I am sick from it all. I am no homebreaker." "Girlie," he said, "don't be foolish." "No, no. Goodbye, good luck," I said. "I am sincere." So I went and stayed with Mama for a week's vacation and cleaned up all the closets and scrubbed the walls till the paint came off. She was very grateful. All the same, her hard life made her say, "Now we see the end. If you live like a bum, you are finally a lunatic." After this few days, I came back to my life. When we met, me and Vlashkin, we said only hello and goodbye. And then, for a few sad years, with the head we nodded as if to say, "Yes, yes, I know who you are." Meanwhile, in the field was a whole new strategy. Your mama and your grandmama brought around boys. Your own father had a brother. You never even seen him, Reuben, a serious fellow. His idealism was his hat and his coat. "Rosie, I offer you a big, new, free, happy, unusual life." "How?" "With me, we will raise up the sands of Palestine to make a nation. That is the land of tomorrow for us Jews." "Ha-ha, Reuben, I'll go tomorrow then." "Rosie," says Reuben, "we need strong women like you, mothers and farmers." "You don't fool me, Reuben. What you need is dray horses, but for that you need more money. I don't like your attitude, Rose. In that case, go and multiply. Goodbye. Another fellow, Yonkel Gerstein, a regular sport dressed to kill, with such an excitable nature. In those days, it looks to me like yesterday, the youngest girls wore undergarments like Battle Creek, Michigan. To him, it was a matter of seconds. Where did he practice, a Jewish boy? Nowadays, I suppose it is easier, Lily. My goodness, I ain't asking you nothing. Touchy, touchy. Well, by now you must know yourself, honey. Whatever you do, life don't stop. It only sits a minute and dreams a dream. While I was saying to all these silly youngsters, no, 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 Vlashkin went to Europe and toured a few seasons. Moscow, Prague, London, even Berlin. Already a pessimistic place. When he came back, he wrote a book you could get from the library even today, The Jewish Actor Abroad. If someday you're interested enough in my lonesome years, you could read it. You could absorb a flavor of the man from the book. Oh, no, no, I am not mentioned. After all, who am I? When the book came out, I stopped him in the street to say congratulations. But I am not a liar, so I pointed out, too, the egotism of many parts. Even the critics said something along such lines. Talk is cheap, Vlashkin answered me. But who are the critics? Tell me, do they create? Not to mention, he continues, there is a line in Shakespeare, in one of the plays from the great history of England. It says, self-loving is not so vile a sin, my liege, as self-neglecting. This idea also appears in modern times in the moralistic followers of Freud. Rose, are you listening? You asked a question. By the way, you look very well. How come the wedding ring? I walked away from this conversation in tears. But this talking in the street opened the happy road up for more discussions in regard to many things. For instance, the management, very narrow-minded, wouldn't give him any more certain young men's parts. Fools! What youngest man knew enough about life to be as young as him? Rosie, Rosie, he said to me one day, I see by the clock on your rosy, rosy face you must be 30. The hands are slow, Vlashkin. On a week before Thursday, I was 34. Is that so, Rosie? I worry about you. It has been on my mind to talk to you. You are losing your time. Do you understand it? A woman should not lose her time. Oi, Vlashkin, if you are my friend, what is time? For this he had no answer, only looked at me surprised. We went instead, full of interest, but not without former speed, up to my new place on 94th Street. The same pictures on the wall, all of Vlashkin, only now everything painted red and black, which was stylish, and new upholstery. A few years ago, there was a book by another member of that fine company, an actress, the one that learned English very good and went uptown, Maria Kavkaz, in which she says certain things regarding Vlashkin, such as he was her lover for 11 years. She's not ashamed to write this down. Without respect for him, his wife and children, or even others who also may have feelings in the matter. Now, Lily, don't be surprised. This is called a fact of life. An actor's soul must be like a diamond. The more faces it got, the more shining is his name. Honey, you will no doubt love and marry one man and have a couple kids and be happy forever till you die tired. More than that, a person like us don't have to know. But a great artist like Volodya Vlashkin, in order to make a job on the stage, he's got to practice. I understand it now. To him, life is like a rehearsal. Myself, when I saw him in The Father-in-Law, an older man in love with a darling young girl, his son's wife, played by Razel Amazel, I cried. What he said to this girl, how he whispered such sweetness, how all his hot feelings were on his face. Lily, all this experience he had with me, the very words were the same. You can imagine how proud I was. So the story creeps to an end. I noticed it first on my mother's face, the rotten handwriting of time scribbled up and down her cheeks, across her forehead, back and forth. A child could read. It said, old, old, old. But it troubled my heart most to see these realities scratched on Vlashkin's wonderful expression. First, the company fell apart. The theater ended. Esther Leopold died from being very aged. Krimberg had a heart attack. Maria went to Broadway. Also, Razzle changed her name to Rosalind and was a big comical hit in the movies. Vlashkin himself, no place to go, retired. It said in the paper, an actor without peer, he will write his memoirs and spend his last years in the bosom of his family among his thriving grandchildren, the apple of his wife's doting eye. This is journalism. We made for him a great dinner of honor. At this dinner, I said to him for the last time, I thought, goodbye, dear friend, topic of my life, now we part. And to myself, I said further, finished. This is your lonesome bed. A lady what they call fat and 50. You made it personally. From this lonesome bed, you will finally fall to a bed not so lonesome, only crowded with a million bones. And now comes Lily Guess. Last week, washing my underwear in the basin, I get a buzz on the phone. Excuse me, is this the Rose Lieber, formerly connected with the Russian Art Theater? It is. Well, well, how do you do, Rose? This is Vlashkin. Vlashkin? Volodya Vlashkin? In fact. How are you, Rose? Living Vlashkin, thank you. You are all right, really, Rose. Your health is good? You are working? My health, considering the weight it must carry, is first class. I am back for some years now where I started, in novelty wear. Very interesting. Listen, Vlashkin, tell me the truth. What's on your mind? My mind. Rosie, I am looking up an old friend, an old warm-hearted companion of more joyous days. My circumstances, by the way, are changed. I am retired, as you know. Also, I am a free man. What? What do you mean? Mrs. Vlashkin is divorcing me. What came over her? Did you start drinking or something for melancholy? She is divorcing me for adultery. But Vlashkin, you should excuse me, don't be insulted, but you got maybe 17, 18 years on me, and even me, all this nonsense, these daydreams and nightmares, is mostly for the pleasure of conversation alone. I pointed all this out to her. My dear, I said, my time is past. My blood is as dry as my bones. The truth is, Rose, she isn't accustomed to have a man around all day, reading out loud from the papers the interesting events of our time, waiting for breakfast, waiting for lunch. So all day she gets madder and madder. By nighttime, a furious old lady gives me supper. She has information from the last 50 years to pepper my soup. Surely there was a Judas in that theater saying every day, Vlashkin, Vlashkin, Vlashkin. And while my heart was circulating with his smiles, he was on the wire passing the dope to my wife. Such a foolish end, Volodya, to such a lively story. What is your plans? First, could I ask you for dinner in the theater? Uptown, of course. After this, we are old friends. I have money to burn. What your heart desires. Others are like grass. The north wind of time has cut out their heart. Of you, Rosie, I recreate only kindness. What a woman should be to a man, you are to me. Do you think, Rosie, a couple of old pals like us could have a few good times among the material things of this world? My answer, Lily, in a minute, was altogether, yes, yes, come up, I said. Ask the room by the switchboard. Let us talk. So he came that night, and every night in the week, we talked of his long life, even at the end of time, a fascinating man. And like men are, too, till time's end, trying to get away in one piece. Listen, Rosie, he explains the other day. I was married to my wife, do you realize, nearly half a century. What good was it? Look at the bitterness. The more I think of it, the more I think we would be fools to marry. Volodya Vlashkin, I told him straight. When I was young, I warmed your cold back many a night, no questions asked. You admit it, I didn't make no demands. I was soft-hearted. I didn't want to be called Rosie Lieber, a breaker-up of homes. But now, Vlashkin, you are a free man. How could you ask me to go with you on trains, to stay in strange hotels among Americans, not your wife? Be ashamed. So now, darling Lily, tell this story to your mama from your young mouth. She don't listen to a word from me. She only screams, I'll faint, I'll faint. Tell her, after all, I'll have a husband. Which, as everybody knows, a woman should have at least one before the end of the story. My goodness, I am already late. Give me a kiss. After all, I watched you grow from a plain seed. So give me a couple wishes on my wedding day. A long and happy life. Many years of love. Hug Mama. Tell her from Aunt Rose. Goodbye and good luck.
That was Goodbye and Good Luck, written by Grace Paley and read by Rhea Perlman. The story appears in the Collected Stories of Grace Paley, published in 1994 by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux, used with permission of the author. And that concludes today's program of Jewish short stories from Eastern Europe and beyond, produced by the National Yiddish Book Center and public radio station KCRW Santa Monica. The series was directed by Joan Micklin Silver and produced in the studios of KCRW by Laurie Alana McGlinchey and Johanna Cooper, with assistance from Roz Abraham. Original music was composed and arranged by Hankus Netsky. Narration was written by Leonard Glick, Kenneth Turan, Aaron Lansky, and Laurie McGlinchey. Our engineers are Theo Mondel, Lechik Wojcik, and Jerry LaRosa. Music engineered by Steve Revelak and John Servies, with production assistance by George B. Hicks and Stefan Weibel. Sound mixing by Theo Mondel and Ray Guana. Our executive producers are Aaron Lansky and Ruth Seymour. The full 13-hour series of Jewish short stories from Eastern Europe and beyond is available on cassette from the National Yiddish Book Center. For information, please call 1-800-9-SERIES, 1-800-973-7437. Major funding for this series was provided by the Joseph S. and Diane Steinberg Charitable Trust of New York City. Additional support was provided by the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Dora Teitelbaum Foundation, the Lewis and Helen Padnos Foundation, the California Arts Council, the Joseph Meyerhoff Memorial Trusts, Irving and Trudy Lehrer, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the members and friends of KCRW and the National Yiddish Book Center. Support for the distribution of this program comes from National Public Radio member stations and National Public Radio, whose contributors include the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people make the arts part of their everyday lives. For KCRW and the National Yiddish Book Center, I'm Leonard Nimoy. This is NPR, National Public Radio.